Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
VoxMarkets.co.uk/app. You can download our free app from there, and you'll get RNS's significant news from companies you follow within seconds to the front screen of your smartphone. As I said, free of charge. Give it a try. What are you going to lose? Listen, it's free, but it's priceless, okay? So go for it now. VoxMarkets.co.uk/app. Okay, episode 1104. It is Thursday, the 28th of June, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Tlou Energy, or Tlou Energy, T-L-O-U is ticker. And Tony gives an operational update on their coal bed methane to power project in Botswana and answers private investor questions. Also on the podcast, Lawrence Reed, CEO of Bezant Resources, BZT, discusses the Mankayan Copper and Gold Project from a copper conference in London. Also on the podcast, Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple, T-O-O-P, discuss their recent contract win with one of the UK's leading utility switching businesses and their new CFO appointment. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Tlou Energy. T-L-O-U is the ticker. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Great to be here.
Now, you've released an operations update, and we'll cover that in a bit. But as always, Tony, if there's someone brand new to the podcast, never heard about the company whatsoever, how would you summarise what Tlou is all about, please?
Yes, indeed. We're the most advanced coal bed methane gas company in Botswana. Our project is the only one with full environmental approval for the upstream, a 25-year mining licence, and independent gas reserves.
Marvellous stuff. Okay. So you released the operations update. It's pretty much broken down into three sections. Core hole drilling rig, production well drilling program, and the CBM retender. So we'll just cover those off. We do have questions from investors, so this could be a longer than normal podcast, but we'll try and get through them all. So first of all, Tony, just go through, if you got the highlights of that operations update, if you could, in brief.
Yes, it was to draw the shareholders' attention to the fact that the core rig is indeed on the way. There were some minor delays, and now we're expecting it to clear customs and be on site in July, perhaps as early as middle of July, and then we can get that core rig ready to drill core holes, and that will be a big advancement for the company because we'll be able to do it much cheaper in the past. and with such a large acreage position being about 8,000 square kilometres, 100% owned, owning that rig gives us much more control of the core well drilling operation.
Yeah, and this is to potentially expand your reserves, is that right?
That's right. The seismic data that we acquired early on in the year was highly successful in giving us a very clear subsurface image of what's going on with the coal geology. And the core hole allows us to, or additional core holes allows us to test that seismic to see whether that coal geology is valid, of course, and we think it is, but the core hole tells us 100% it's valid. And indeed, the core hole also tells us not only the thickness of the coal, but the all-important gas content. So it leads to additional reserve confidence, Justin.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's go to the next section of the RNS, which is the production well drilling program. Take us through the detail here, if you could, Tony.
Yes, see, the recent raising, of course, it was at a lower price than what we would have ideally wanted, and it was off the back of the cancellation of the tender with the government for the power purchase agreement. It caused our share price to dip, but we wanted to, of course, keep the project moving forward and progressing in a logical manner, in a timely manner, to allow us to prove up more gas and particularly to get into a stronger position to deliver gas into the grid via electricity in the not-too-distant future. So that capital raising allows us to now drill more production wells, or production pods as they're called. And along those lines, we have enough funding now to do at least one pod, and we're anticipating additional funding via the current process to drill more than one pod. Now, the more wells one drills, Justin, the lower the risk and the lower the cost. So we're keen to do more than one, but one is better than none, two is better than one, and three is better than two. We'll see the full funding position, which will dictate just how many pods in the very near term. But at least one will go down, hence we have ordered the long lead time items, and we're finalising the rig selection now, and we look forward to starting the first of those new pods in the third quarter, which starts next week, start of the third quarter, more than likely in August, in the middle of that third quarter, but it may drift a little bit sooner or a little bit later, of course.
Yeah, when you say looking at the funding, are you talking about the finalisation of the open offer, is that right?
Correct, it depends on how much comes through that process, Justin, will dictate just how many additional pods we can drill, how many we can scale up, and we'll see what happens in the very near term there.
Yeah, I like the term rig selection. I just imagined, I pictured then, Tony, you standing in front of a load of rigs and just walking up and down the line of rigs thinking, yeah, I like the look of that one. Is that the way it works or not?
not quite. A very, very capable operations manager, Danny Horn, he is in charge of that, and we take Danny's input and assessment and his recommendation in terms of rigs, and he's been looking for a suitable rig for about 6 months now, having planned this program for some time.
Okay, all right. Well, let's just go to the final third here of the RNS, which was released. And this is the one that's the section, I suppose, that's getting most attention because of the tender to the government, the request proposal, which was delayed due to the compliant issues. And you've come out with a bit of an update here. I notice in that you do say, not yet confirmed, but it's looking quite positive. So can you explain what's happening and why you think it's quite positive, please?
Well, we have our executive director on the ground based in Habaroni, the capital of Botswana, Habaki Habaki, and Habaki is regularly meeting with the government and getting updates. He's doing a lot more than that, of course. He's also looking after a stakeholder liaison in terms of the environmental approval for our downstream development, et cetera, et cetera. In relation to his government meetings regarding the tender process. He's getting very positive feedback. The government is assessing the criteria again, and we are confident, more than hopeful, we're confident that they will adjust the criteria such that it's able to be compliant. A tender document submitted by Te Lau is able to be compliant with the tender requirements, and hopefully get a better result this time, Justin.
Yeah, because my understanding of it was essentially, it was what cancelled or halted or stopped because there was parts of the document you couldn't be compliant with, because it was the outline of the document was for a revenue generating business that exists already. Is that the case? And so, that was withdrawn because of that. Was that the case?
Well, that's certainly a lot to do with it. In other words, the original tender document perhaps should have been drafted in a manner that it was more readily able to be complied with. Now, we thought these were fairly minor matters, so we proceeded with submitting the tender. It ended up, of course, the result tells us that they were considered to be quite significant matters that the government required us to be compliant on, and we couldn't be compliant on a number of those points. We're clearly the most advanced CBM company in Botswana. The government set up the tender primarily at our request to do a pilot, a power generation project, and it just was one of those things, unfortunately, that the terminology used in that tender by the government wasn't able to be strictly complied with. Now, everyone recognises the issue now. The process got a bit away from everyone, I guess. Everyone's working together now to try and get a more, a successful outcome, because the government is still right behind us in terms of wanting our power generation project to succeed. The government still needs the energy. All the projections are that the energy crisis in the region will get much worse with time, and it is widely recognised that we could be a very significant part of the process to make to fill energy gaps into the future, yeah. Justin. So we'll see how the second process evolves from here. We remain confident that with goodwill on both sides, a successful outcome will be achieved. The timing, as always, is very difficult to predict. And I guess we would prefer a thorough document and it being well thought out prior to it being issued again. And one would hope that that's what's happening at the moment.
Okay. All right, let's go through some questions. You may have covered off certain bits of that, of these just then. But firstly, are you at the same time looking to pursue a dual strategy of directly supplying power to Botswana from a smaller pilot plant whilst awaiting the result of any re-tender process?
The short answer is absolutely. In fact, I will expand on that by saying we're looking at multiple strategies to supply power into the grid. That includes supplying power to third parties other than the government, whether they're external to the country or internal to the country, working on the tender process, because that's something we've all gone down the path of, and a well-worn path, and so we'll continue with that. And also we'll be looking at applying for the appropriate licences. We're in the process of that now, applying for the appropriate licences to generate power and to connect to the grid, regardless of an official tender process. And we would anticipate that by the end of that process, when we're connected to the grid, there would be power consumers who would take our electricity in any event. Mm-hmm. The one with the most certain pathway that gives us access to the cheapest source of capital in the nearest term is still the tender process. So obviously, we will pursue that whilst running to ground these other parallel strategies.
Yeah. Next question. Is Tony still talking to the Botswana Development Company? Now, just to explain, I mean, the Botswana Development Company are owned by the Botswana government, aren't they? So, is this, and they're there for development of projects in Botswana, etc. But is this reliant on the tender process or not? And you having a fruitful discussion and development arrangement with these or not?
Well, we have recognised that there is a quantity of funds within Botswana, whether it be the pension funds, whether it be investment managers, whether it be Botswana Development Corporation, call them a sovereign wealth fund for want of a better term. So there are a number of sources of capital within the country. And we firmly believe that the greater ownership of the company within the country of Botswana, the greater the buy-in to the project, and will not only facilitate it coming to fruition, but guarantees that the profits, the upside of the project, is owned not only by external shareholders, but by a number of the locals as well. So we're very keen on that. We have African Alliance as a major shareholder in the company, and they're an aggregator of funds, including pension funds. So that was a very important milestone for us to get African Alliance on board. And Botswana Development Corp, we're certainly still speaking with them. With our discussions to date, it's clear that we meet all of their mandate requirements. I understand that we meet their risk committee requirements. So, therefore, at what stage would we ask them to physically invest? And the development stage would be probably the most likely point in time to ask them, would they like to fund the development? And that can be via a number of different financial instruments. It doesn't have to be via equity. So, yes, we are still speaking with them. The amount of funds that they normally invest is quite significant in projects. And, of course, our project in the early stages, at least, doesn't require very significant funding. So it generally ticks all the boxes. It's a matter of timing. And, indeed, a PPA and a way to market, Justin, would clearly facilitate doing a financial instrument of some sort with BDC.
Yeah, okay. Next question is, what is Gigi's role in lobbying the government? Has the recent change in government slowed things down? Because wasn't it in the last couple of months the government was changed, is that correct?
Indeed. To answer the first question first, Gigi's role for the company is very significant in terms of government liaison, whether it's with the bureaucrats or the minister level. It's very significant for the company. He is well known, of course, in Botswana and was a former government PS himself many years ago. So it's a major role for Gigi to get in there and speak with the government regularly, let them know what we're doing, make sure they don't forget about us, and lobbying as best as he can to keep processes moving. Now, his feedback's very important, and it's been very positive so far with his meetings with the government over the previous few months, and that gives us, as the other members of management, the confidence to say to shareholders we're heading in the right direction. So that's Gigi's role there.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. And do you think the change in government has slowed things down a bit? I mean, generally that happens in most countries, doesn't it? You know.
Well, and that was, of course, part two of the question. The change in government occurred early on in April, although the process really started. Everyone knew what was happening. First quarter this year, so things start to slow down. And then indeed, you're absolutely right, Justin, most changes in government takes a little while for the new people to settle in and for the wheels of government to start turning around again. And we're seeing some real advancement along those lines of late.
Yeah, but I mean, surely, you know, they know that the problem of power or energy deficit hasn't gone away. So unless they're completely out of tune with what's going on in the country, then surely that's still a pressing issue, isn't it? Something they want to address.
Oh, it is indeed. Now, governments everywhere in Botswana is no different. They have a lot of pressing issues. Mm-hmm. And the need for power goes up and down as far as a number one priority or in the top six. Justin, sometimes when other priorities come up, part of our job is to make sure, and Gigi's job is to make sure that they don't forget about us and what we can do for the country in terms of cleaner energy, energy security, and Botswana energy rather than importing it. And we're keeping that in the forefront. We're lobbying as best as we can, and we're increasing our PR effort as much as we can to get that message across. And it's just a matter of priorities. It is a high priority. We think it's very, very high. And obviously to us, it's number one. To a government running a country, there are other priorities too, Justin. So we keep the pressure on as best as we diplomatically can.
Yeah, okay. Okay, this is a one-word answer to this one, Tony, if the quote is accurate here. So on a previous podcast, Tony said that to him, it is as clear as night turns into day that Botswana will one day be using Talau's coal bed methane to fuel power to the country. Does he still believe this to be the case?
Yes.
Okay. And a couple of two more questions. Assuming tender is granted, what are the plans to develop plants minimising any dilution to shareholders?
Well, we're working on many other strategies other than straight equity. Justin and I touched on before our discussions with Botswana Development Corp to date have been around when is it suitable, or when does it fit their criteria and our criteria for them to potentially advance as debt, a mezzanine, and is there a little bit of a mixture of equity in there? We don't mind equity at all with the Botswana entities because it increases ownership, increases buy-in to our project and the future of Tulu, the future of making money for shareholders. We would like to make money for local shareholders over there as much as anyone else. So our objective is to primarily seek development funding, of which there isn't much required compared to a mine or what have you. It's relatively a small quantum of capital. And our objective is to seek that from internally within Botswana. But we're also going further afield. Obviously, the downstream power generators worldwide are a good source of capital. They're all keen to invest in Africa, and they all recognise Botswana as a great jurisdiction in which to do business. So they're our primary sources of capital for the generation poles and wires side of the development.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, and the last question is, what value drivers and operational catalysts do you see in the near term?
Well, as we know, we've been around for a while, Justin, you and I and others in this space, and when one raises capital, one wants to have a nice active work program around that, and the objective is to generate news flow, meaningful news flow, with which we can promote the company's message, get it out there, get interest in the stock, get the stock turning over and ideally going up. So we believe we have a strong work program on the back of this capital raising to generate positive news flow, which should in all else being equal, stimulate the share price in the right direction. Now, that news flow includes we'll have our own core rig to drill wells and test new areas of our 8,000 square kilometres. We'll be starting the all-important development, first stage of the development drilling with the production pods are going down in the third quarter as per the recent announcement. And that will, all else being equal, deliver the objective of achieving good gas flows, which is a very, very, which would be a very, very positive announcement and should get the share price moving based on additional value-adding for the shareholders. We already have our approvals in place for the upstream, our environmental approvals. We have that 25-year mining license. We already have reserves. If we can also enhance our flow rate in the upcoming program, which will be funded for now with this capital raising, if we can enhance our flow rate, well, that should result in a very good announcement at the appropriate time.
Marvellous. Okay, Tony, three quick bullet point reasons why someone listening right now who's not following the story should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we're the only gas company in Botswana with independently certified gas reserves. We have full environmental approval in place for the upstream, a 25-year and mining license. And I'll add a kind of a third point, we'll call it 3B. The region is, if not right today, chronically short of energy. It will be as in the very near term as the population continues to grow and the demand for electricity continues to rise. Justin.
Marvellous. Tony, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. In the not-too-distant future, sorry. Thanks very much, Tony.
Thank you, Justin. All the best.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Chief Executive Officer of Bezant Resources. BZT is the ticker there. Lawrence, thanks for joining me.
Absolute pleasure.
Now, before we catch up, because for two reasons, you're doing work there, you've started a strategic sort of review, and you're looking at that, you're over in the Philippines looking at the resource, but also you've just come back and you're at the Copper Conference. And where is that, Lawrence?
Well, it's been the Copper section of the Mining Journal Select Conference. It's the inaugural one. So essentially it's thematic, it's talking about copper, it has larger copper companies, so companies which are in development, companies which are producing, and it's being held in London. Cool. And very interesting it is too.
Okay, and that's relevant anyway. I mean, if you're into resource stocks and all that, it is relevant completely, but of course it's relevant to Bezant, and it's probably, you know, worth you giving a brief summary as to what Bezant is all about, if you could, Lawrence.
Well, essentially, it's now a pure play focus on copper and gold. We think it's the right time in the cycle for copper and gold. And we have a portfolio of, I think, certainly one tier, one asset, and the Mankind asset in the Philippines, which is a significant indicating inferred resource on it. And Argentina as well, which we're having a very close look at. So Argentina and Philippines, both jurisdictions that are becoming increasingly attractive. And as shareholders know, we've been having a very steady series of reviews on what we're doing. We're thinking very carefully about the portfolio and how we derive value from it. So we've had the engineering review going on. Geologists are on site at present, so reviewing everything from the core to the data sets. We'll be updating the market shortly on our thoughts and on what we're going to be doing. But at the end of the day, we have one very significant copper gold resource of 400 million tons mineable inventory. And today is really interesting in terms of listening to the experts. Today's conference isn't about me talking about copper gold. It's listening to investors in copper gold, listening to the major groups in copper gold. And some of the interesting things is nobody's talking about mining. They're talking about electricity and they're talking about power today.
Yeah. Well, just going back to the resource there, it is massive compared to the valuation of the company. I mean, looking at, because quite a lot of work has gone into this, hasn't it? And like I said, it's a post-tax NPV of around just under $800 million and total post-tax net cash flows of approximately $3.7 billion. So that's massive, isn't it? So, I point this out to people and they say, wow. And there is obviously concern about the Philippines because the current guy in charge seems quite down on miners. I mean, it doesn't seem anti-mining. It seems more pro-environment, isn't he?
Well, I think a lot of the basically it's anti-open pit mining. So a lot of the things that you see coming out of the Philippines government is about long-term negative practices. And you can see the pictures on the internet of some of the things that have been going on. And that's very distinct to what we are, which is a potentially large but underground mine in a region with underground mines surrounding it. So copper, gold, porphyry, way below the surface, with a completely different footprint to an open cut mine.
I see. And as far as what you, I mean, you raised recently £800,000, and you just sort of mentioned there that you're going to be looking into it. What do you hope to be doing, sort of optimizing that sort of resource or the workflows, or what are you going to do with the money?
Well, what we're doing is we're having a look through all the primary data, and I think going back to first principles is absolutely key on both the projects, but really on Mankind, looking into the core, looking at the mine design, looking at ways, I don't want to preempt myself, but looking at other ways in which the project could potentially be approached and thought about, especially in terms of grade. I think we've mentioned before that we're looking very closely at the last holes drilled by Goldfields and the grade returns on that. Now, we are going to be announcing something, an update on our findings and our thoughts on this, but it's really about in 2018 with the copper, particularly the copper outlook, with a major resource like this, Mankind in the Philippines, is let's go back, let's really look very closely on what a workable mine's actually going to look like.
Yeah, but you're going to get some interest on this, surely, because, I mean, like you say, you're at the copper, you know, section of that conference there, and I assume everyone's quite bullish on copper, aren't they?
Bullish doesn't even go to describe it, but I think I'm going to go away from bullish in terms of let's believe in copper, let's not believe in copper. It's the conversation, it's the debate going on today. You know, the people who are held up today from the panel of speakers, the people from the big oil and gas majors and the power companies, you know, we're hearing about electric vehicles, we're hearing about, you know, 40 kilograms of copper used today in a vehicle, rising to 80 to 100 kilograms of copper used in an electric vehicle without even touching the copper needed in infrastructure development. You know, we're listening, we've been told, we've been berated as mining companies in a sense for not understanding the power sector and the implications that copper, that will have on copper. We're talking about, people are talking about basically the decoupling of copper from the rest of the commodity cycle because of the increasing electrification of our power needs. So, you know, getting away from traditional coal sources, etc., electric cars, you know, batteries in houses. And, you know, once upon a time, this was seen as the stuff of the future. But now it's really come to roost, if you like. And the other interesting comments were, in a sense, the severe slingback. So you talk about valuation, Justin, but the fact in a sense that the capital structure for an exploration for mines isn't necessarily working efficiency. So you're going to see potentially huge bounces, according to a couple of speakers, in terms of the copper price. It's basically supply has to rapidly catch up to demand. And we always talk about, you know, people talk about, you know, Escondida for years going to be needed to keep pace with current demand. But then on top of that, if we start looking at even a fraction of electrification of the planet and all the places where it's going on, things start getting quite extraordinary. Yeah. So lots of stuff to be, and I think as small cap companies, as companies with good asset but with a low share price, sometimes we have to keep our heads out of the boat, and sometimes we actually have to listen to what's going on around us. And people talking about the lots of different subjects like the integration that the a final users will have to have in copper supply is very interesting. And I think back to the Armara story, Clough, with I think it was the gold JV that they did with Mitsubishi. It's that type of deal which suddenly is pricking my attention. Sorry, waffling on.
No. It's very interesting you say the decoupling of copper. It'll become that, you know, sought after, you know, and used and integrated into life, that it literally will almost become impervious to the general cycle, the commodity cycle. Because, because when you think of it, going back to this project, you know, in the Philippines here, because, you know, when sentiment wasn't so favourable towards copper, like I said, Goldfields offered, what, was it $75 or $70 million for this?
That's right.
So that's when sentiment wasn't like this, and they weren't talking like this. So now you're thinking, hang on, so, you know, it's got to be improving, isn't it? If someone came to offer now something for the project, if they're happy, improved it off of that, surely.
Two things I'll say. Two of the themes, okay. Absolutely fascinating. One, it's previously 5-10 years ago, the accepted wisdom was you have to be looking over at one. Now it's going towards 0.5 in terms of copper content, and increasingly it will go, probably people will have to be, the accepted norm is 0.3 to 0.5. Cost wise, people are talking about the conference that you've got to be looking about all in costs of around $40 per ore ton. So we're at $21, and our project, which previously people have said, well, you're a bit low grade, etc., on indicated, so that's 221.6 million tons, it's 0.49% copper and 0.52% gold. So suddenly, I'm not going to say, well, it must be worth this, Justin, because that would be naughty, but what I'm fascinated by is the cost conversation. Suddenly people are understanding the implications of the need for these big, big projects like Mankind, and realizing that the grade, there are no 1% projects left anymore. So I think for the market, reality is going to set in, and there's very few projects like this defined to a JORC 2012 resource.
Interesting. Okay, and so what, when do you think you'll be having news out? Next month or so, or what, before that?
I don't want to put a time frame on it, but I would hope within the month. Basically, we'd have to sit down. We're having group meetings fairly shortly, basically to getting all the component parts from all the key experts coming together on the project. But I'm really looking forward to updating the market on what we found.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Lawrence, you know what I like to hear. Go on, give someone, if someone's listening to this and like the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you, Bezant Resources, to their watch list, please.
Well, we already have a copper gold portfolio. We have probably one of the largest JORC 2012 resources independent in the entire world. And what I'm going to be doing this evening is I'm going to be going to look at the CERAWeek Houston Energy Conference presentations and the Shell and the BP energy conversations on electricity usage, because that's what I've learned today. And I'm going to be looking at the consequence of electrification of the world and copper, because I'll leave you with something. One of the key investors who was on the panel today said, What these copper guys should be doing is going out and talking to BMW. And I think that's interesting.
Yeah, wow. Marvellous stuff. Lawrence, thanks for the chat. And like I said, news hopefully won't be too far off, so we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tupel. That's T-O-O-P, ticker. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Yes, as we last talked, you've had quite a busy period, and we're going to concentrate on two bits of significant news you've released of late. Before we do that, Andy, for people listening right now, let's say they've never heard of the company, how would you summarise it for them?
Yeah, very simply, we're a specialist provider of telecoms propositions and services to the UK small business market. We provide data connectivity such as broadband, high-speed broadband, fibre connections into premises, back that up with cloud-based telephony solutions for small businesses, and also mobility through mobile SIMs from all the leading networks in the UK. All that is underpinned by a unique software platform that interconnects with the biggest UK carriers and provides small businesses with a fixed price solution for the life of their contract with guaranteed no price rises at a transparent cost to small businesses so they can budget. And the software platform then also lends itself to our wholesale business, which are resellers that can dial in and get access to the platform for a license fee basis, where they can buy at some exciting prices in order to service their own customers and take a billing solution as well if they want from our platform for a license fee.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's skip back a couple of days, and you announced a contract win with one of the UK's leading utility switching businesses. This sounds quite good. Take us through the detail here, if you could, Andy.
Yes, certainly. It's a really pleasing contract win. It's one of the leading energy providers to the UK small business market. They have somewhere in the region of 35,000 to 40,000 small businesses that have already taken energy from them, whether it be electric, gas, water, or a combination of the three. What has become apparent to them over the last couple of years is that because of the confidence that small business has in their approach, they've been continually asked for a telecom solution. So they went out to market, looked at the market, and went through a process to look at who the best partner would be going forwards to add a telecom solution that they can take to those 35 to 40,000 small businesses. Really pleased to say that Tupel went through the process, and what came out the other side was the Tupel brand, the Tupel proposition in terms of its transparency of pricing, its fixed cost approach to the small business market, really fitted with their values. And we were pleased to confirm on Monday morning the signing of a 36-month agreement.
Yeah, that's excellent news, isn't it? The fact that they went through that process and you came out on top speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It was a synergy between our values and their values. It's very different that when you're dealing with the small business market as opposed to the consumer market, it's less about hero deals and it's more about understanding what the small business wants, and that is transparency, UK customer service, a fixed price approach so that they can budget. And, you know, we are leading in terms of our disruptive approach to the market to make sure our price is competitive within the environment we work on. But more importantly, when a customer's in life, do they get great customer service? Is the pricing fixed? Is it transparent? Is the billing easy to understand? And that was probably what won through against the competitors that were also talking to them about securing the partnership going forwards.
Okay. And when do they start selling this live? When does it go live?
So the Merlin platform is currently being rolled out and embedded into their sales teams so that they can talk to the customers over the phone and provision to Tupel instantly. Then it's the training of their sales teams that currently own the relationships with their customers. And we've got a go live date of the first week in August.
Excellent stuff. And it's a very positive line in the RNS as well, saying it's anticipated that this will be the first of several similar agreements. So that's positive as well.
Yeah, the pipeline of these kind of agreements is strong. I'm hopeful that that we'll be talking again shortly. But we're, you know, for now it's executing, delivering, making sure that the people at this energy provider can delight their customers with a Tupel proposition, and it will be material to our monthly order rate.
Yeah. Okay. And it must be material because you've just taken on board a quite a heavyweight CFO as well. So in Kevin Lawrence, take us through Kevin's track record and why you've appointed him, please. Andy, if you could.
Yeah, very simply, the business is obviously going through significant growth phase and that will continue. We're always mindful of the quality of our leadership team and the makeup of the board. Our market is increasingly a consolidation market, lots of acquisition opportunities that present themselves within that market. Kevin is a superbly qualified chartered accountant and has got a track record of mergers and acquisitions, creating growth within businesses. And obviously, I think the appointment and Kevin's background says it all. Brings now a really, really good complement to our leadership team of Richard Horsman, the chairman, Kevin, obviously, Lawrence, the incoming CFO, Jeff Wilson, the non-exec. All of those people have considerable experience of growth through organic and through M&A. So I'm really pleased now with the makeup of our board and the value that Kevin will bring going forwards as the Chief Financial Officer.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, right now, I mean, looking forward, we've almost had 6 months of the year here. Are you quite optimistic about the next 6 months?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the 6 months that we've completed now, or due to complete at the end of the week for 2018, is showing significant order growth over to 2017. More importantly, the pipeline of new potential partnerships and new potential orders again is very strong. So I think we're in a really pleasing and a really confident position.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Marvellous. Andy, well, listen, one final thing to do. If someone is listening to this and likes the sound of what you're talking about, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yes, certainly. Number one, as we can see from today's announcement, now we have a very significant and very strong leadership team to take the business forward. Number two, all of our revenues that come in are great annuity revenues. They're bankable revenues. They demonstrate a great return on our working capital. All our customers contract for minimum 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, with over 80% of our orders coming in on 24-month bankable contracts. And number three, we operate in a very exciting growth market, which presents significant opportunity through the consolidation that's happening within that market.
Marvellous stuff. Good to chat to you, Andy, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Rose Petroleum, R-O-S-E. Had the guys on twice. I like them a lot. I got to say, I did buy a bit of a stock earlier on. Because if you look at their CPR, which is Competent Persons Report, and they just have their major contingent resources, they're massive. They're in Utah, so it's a friendly jurisdiction. And the oil there, net to them, just on a fraction of their acreage, it's been done, 3D seismic has been interpreted. And it gives them a net present value of $122 million. They are a sub 5 million market cap company. And like I say, this is only over 17,000 acres of the 80,000 acres. So 17 of 80, 80. So a lot more to come there. So I just like the potential there. At four, Rock Fire Resources. Good ticker. I don't know anything about them. At three, Cadence, KDNC. Of course, Kieran was on the podcast yesterday. They've invested in Premier African Minerals lithium asset, the Zulu asset. At two, UK Oil and Gas, UCOG. And at one, it's ARC Minerals, ARCM. All right, here are the top five most liked RNSs. At five, Sirica Energy, Columbus Field Development Plan submission. At four, Live Company Group, Brick Live Animal Paradise contract. At three, Echo Energy, appointment of joint broker. At two, ARC Minerals, Akianga, resource update. And it's like, I think they're over 100% update, I think, is that? Increase in the resource. And at one, of course, I talked to Tony at the top of the podcast. There's Talao Energy, an operations update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT Weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.